Hi, and welcome to this episode of Sales Burrito. I'm Dave Siles. On this episode, we're going to dive into working in the channel at a value-added reseller. What the difference is being a sales engineer on that side of the table versus the vendor side. You may think they're the same, but there are differences. So stay tuned to Sales Burrito.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time! Welcome to Sales Burrito! The premier podcast for today's sales engineers working in technology sales, created by SEs for SEs, with your hosts, Enrique Barreto and Dave Siles.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Sales Burrito. I'm your co-host, Enrique Barreto, and with me, I have the one, the only, the legacy, the one that should not be messed with, Señor David Siles. How are you doing, sir?
Oh, my goodness, man. I'm doing great. A little sunburn from vacation last.
I know. I hope our audience understands. We need breaks too. We are in hiatus. My daughter is on spring break. You've been on vacation. But that does not mean that the content stop, because at the end of the day, to you, our listeners, we have to provide the knowledge chips to our chipsters on everything that we do when it comes to sales engineering. And I like the topic that we picked today. The topic is about sales engineers or solutions architects that are working either at a channel partner or sometimes is referenced as a value-added reseller.
That's right.
We're going to talk about the compare and contrast from a manufacturing sales engineer to a value-added reseller. How are some of the things that are similar and different, and as well as give you some insights and tips on how to utilize these value-added individuals to help you within your campaigns, if your model requires to be a channel. What do you think, Mr. Dave?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I've been on both sides of the table. I mean, my early part of my career, I obviously had a reseller in business, and then I was a partner in a reseller business. You've worked for revalued resellers. So, you know, I think we're good people to speak on the topic, right? Because we've been on both sides, right? And, you know, being on the vendor side right now, I still interface on a daily basis with, you know, our channel, and, you know, most vendors go 100% to market through the channel. So, you know, just because you're not on that side of the table anymore, it means you need to understand how and why, you know, a sales engineer or channel partner works, because at the end of the day, a lot of your business and livelihood is still going to be tied to their success. And so, you know, for the flip side, if you're listening to this podcast and you work for a VAR, or, you know, value-added reseller, or even one of the large DMR, you know, type of places, you know, you obviously have your viewpoint of vendors, and right, and so there's a counterpoint that happens there, and sometimes, you know, we are all on the same page. Sometimes it feels a little adversarial, and you really, at the end of the day, we're all trying to do the right thing by the customer, and so walking through kind of, you know, what the differences are, what the similarities are, you know, and how we can work closer together. I think that's the real goal for this episode, and, you know, impart some of that knowledge, you know, kind of what works, what, you know, things, what things, you know, need to be kind of understood on both sides of the equation, and, you know, really where we can help the industry move forward. And, you know, to that perspective, you know, maybe we just start by kind of giving a baseline. You know, at the end of the day, you know, sales engineer is a sales engineer, right? We all have the goal of, you know, product market fit, you know, identifying pain, aligning that solution to that pain, and selling it. You know, the difference between the vendor side and the channel side is the channel side is going to represent multiple different vendors, right? They may have, you know, solution A and solution B and solution C in their product portfolio, and any one of them can work for the customer. And so really in their viewpoint, they're that trusted advisor to the customer. The value that they're bringing to the customer is that they can give them the right solution for the right time. And if I'm on the vendor side of the equation, I'm obviously positioning my product as the answer, and I have to compete against a competitive, you know, landscape that my partner may be representing against me, right? So, you know, I got to win two people over if I'm on the vendor side. I've got to win the customer over, and I've got to win the trusted advisor who works for that partner over. And so that's where I think, you know, the beginning of the differences start. But, you know, but again, the mission is still the same. You know, it's to solve the pain for the customer, identify a solution to it, and deliver that solution. It's just which lens you're looking through, right?
You make a great point. I mean, when I was running as a director of professional services and solutions architects for the partner company that I was working for, to me, it was eye opening because the amount of products or the amount of manufacturers that came to my office every single day as a pair of a sales rep and a sales engineer from a manufacturer perspective to persuade me on ensuring that I can sell their product and valuing why their product is better than other products is, it was staggering. I mean, it was every day. It was whether it was security, whether it was cloud, whether it was data protection, whether it was infrastructure, someone has a better gadget than the other, right? And when you're working at a value-added reseller, it could be very difficult for a engineer within that VAR to master all the different products that are out there. So great value-added resellers create different specializations. If they're doing infrastructure, then they pick their horses per se. Maybe they're choosing brand A as the primary brand that they're going to go on selling compute, like servers and whatnot. And brand B is an option that if, for example, you know, when you're dealing with a deal registration and you don't have deal registration, but you have access to the customer, brand B may have the similar qualities in brand A. But then you also have brand C, D, E, F, G that may have generate greater margins for that value-added reseller. The solution architect or the sales engineer within the VAR has to navigate through those waters to be able to figure out how to pick that horse. And again, if you pick all your horses, you can't be an expert at everything, right? So having a diversified portfolio is important. I will say one thing that it also is important, David, I want to see if you agree with me or not, is when we're in the manufacturer side, we talk a lot about ensuring that value-added resellers are an extension of sales team within manufacturing, right? So to get to that point, you just said it, right? You have to sell that solutions architect or that sales engineer or the partner to make that happen. But what happens when... You know, how difficult have you seen that process of getting good VARs being an extension of the arm of a manufacturer?
That's a great question. You know, I think it breaks into three different types, right? And I don't mean to stereotypicalize the VAR reselling community, but it does kind of break down in my view three ways, right? There's your mass market resellers, right? Your CDWs, SHIs of the world, and they have specialists, but their real goal is to do volume, right? They have that trusted relationship with the customer where they have a purchasing agreement. They're typically kind of the one call for everything that that person needs IT-wise, and they're gonna get the volume fulfillment, but they're not necessarily gonna be, you know, the subject matter expert or spend the time to really understand your product deep unless you're really one of their top five line card, you know, products, right? So from that perspective, you're going to do all the heavy lifting and you're still going to need them in your partner ecosystem because they open so many doors, right? They have a Rolodex that's a mile deep. There's a second partner, which I will call kind of the regional powerhouses, right? Where they own their market space. They're the brand that's kind of in that region. And, you know, they're the ones that you come to think of as kind of, whether it's infrastructure, security, you know, networking, wireless, whatever it may be. And so you have to partner with them and they're most likely going to be the ones that can carry the water and do everything and they get trained up, right? And that's the, yeah, I'll call them your tier one partners, right? Those are the ones you kind of really want to go find and identify. And you probably have maybe 1,000 partners, maybe 10% of them fall into that bucket. Then there's the rest, which are kind of, you know, I don't want to say the one and done people, but they're the partner record on paper where they had one deal, they brought it to you and they were able to, you know, get you in the door with that customer, but you have to carry all the water, right? You're not going to say no to them because, you know, most likely a deal's a deal and you're going to do that, but they're never going to get enabled, right? So, you know, that's where, you know, you brought it up just a second ago, registration, right? Registration is a huge thing in our industry, you know, and, you know, probably exposing a little bit of the underbelly here because if you're a customer listening to this, you're like, what are they talking about? You know, but I think most customers now know there's things such as deal registration in the channel. But there's this concept of registration. And for you, those that you're listening that don't know what this is, what it is when I come and I say, I've identified customer A, and customer A wants to look for this type of product. I want to represent your product to them. So I want you to guarantee that I'm going to get the best pricing, or I'm going to get the first opportunity to have the best pricing with that customer, right? And so partners will register their opportunity, and most vendor VARs or vendors will give that VAR essentially some kind of protection, saying for the next, you know, 60, 90, 120 days, you have preferred pricing, right? You would have the best discount out of anybody to be able to go at that opportunity because you identified it, brought it to us. Typically, there's some requirements that you have to work that, and you have to be that hands-on person, but not always the time. So that said, if you have another partner in that same market that also wants to try to out-compete for that deal, especially if it's like public sector, you know, they can sell at it too, but they won't have that registered pricing. So their pricing won't be as good. So by the definition of it, they probably won't win the deal. Therefore, they're going to create competition because they're going to go to that B or C or D option they have on their line card and identify that other vendor that, you know, they can try to win that business with, right? It's just natural way the channel works. And so that politic layer of the registration comes into play too. So not only are you, you know, I went a long way around your answer, your question, but, you know, yes, you need to be able to have them be an extension of you, but it's not always going to happen. And even if they are an extension, the politics involved may not allow them to be that extension. So,
yeah,
you know, it all comes down to it. But you know, those tier one partners, right, that middle niche, I don't want to say niche, that middle tier of partner that I described, those are the ones you really want. Those are the ones you're going to spend 90% of your time on, even though they're 10% of your customer base, because they're going to bring 80% of your revenue, right? That'll be 20 rule.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's exactly right. That's
and
exactly
so right. You're going to spend your cycles there. And then if you're doing it right, yes, they should get enabled as much that you could kick something over the fence to them and say, go run with this. And I trust you as much as the guy wearing my shirt who works on my payroll. And yeah, you know, those are the partners that everybody wants. Those are the ones that you really are the force multipliers. And you know, if you're going to be a vendor and have a successful channel, you got to have a cadre to them. And that is the holy grail. That's the whole reason why you built a channel management program, an education, a university, is to get those kind of partners there on your side.
I think one good thing that I've seen with many sales engineers that work with value-added resellers organizations is that they're always willing to help. They're always willing to add value within a campaign. I think where that often the lines begin to blur when you're a manufacturer sales engineer is that you often believe that it's just about enabling them. Hey, let's get our channel team to enable that group on why selling the product and how to size the product and what are the competitive factors and whatnot. And it's too blend. You can't just give them a link and say, here, take these classes and now you're going to get a certificate and whoop-de-doo, now you're certified to sell my product. It goes beyond that. Great sales engineers create and establish expectations with sales engineers that are part of a VAR. The expectations are simple. Hey, I am picking you as my guy to make sure that you can help me with sizing because I'm in the middle of calls or I'm doing different things. What that means is that I'm giving you exclusivity for any deals that are coming within my pipeline to suggest or ensure that I'm working with my AE so those deals are landing to your organization. But these are the things that I need. Let's you and I sit down weekly and look at deals. Let's you and I look at that and help you with sizing, right? Help you with the things that you're going to need so that you become the rock star and it's not me. Because ultimately, the way that I see it, the end game, the value-added reseller should be selling their brand, the product, whatever the product is. It could be, mention the brand name, Cisco, Dell EMC, whatever the moniker brand products, IBM. The brand is the brand. The value-added reseller, because of the pricing, because of the effort that he puts as building a solution and truly becoming a trusted advisor, is the key there. So I'm always looking at partners that say, the value is us. I'm just a brand in the brand in the back end. And if they need somebody from the brand, a manufacturer, to go talk to the customer, is because the partner is unable or hasn't been able to, does not have the expertise or deep dive knowledge to be able to talk about questions that may be deep dive. But ultimately, a good partner is going to know that kind of stuff.
No, that's absolutely true. And yeah, you put it really well. I think, you know, channel takes care in feeding. You know, these people who think I signed up a partner, and I don't care if they're the biggest name in the industry, just because you sign them doesn't make them a part. I mean, it makes them a partner on record on paper, but not doesn't make them an enabled partner, right? I mean, you know, and it is relationship building. I mean, you have to be there. You have to go see them. I mean, you know, the old adage of, you know, you show up on Monday with donuts and Friday with beer, you know, and that's true, right? I mean, because if you're not there, you're out of sight, out of mind, and they have revolving doors in a lot of these places. You know, if you're not spending the quality time with them, one of your competition is. And so, you know, you can't like start it, get in and enable them, walk away either. It's a lifetime long learning, you know, care and feeding exercise. And if your VAR side, you know, business is, I'm sorry, your vendor side business doesn't have a dedicated channel team, you know, then, you know, you as a direct selling SE have to spend those dual cycles because you have to have both, right? And you're absolutely right. I mean, that enablement piece is key, but it's relationship building at its finest. And, you know, the politics and the deal registration policies aside, you know, people like to work with people they like, right? So if you have that relationship, I've won deals where, you know, the channel partner may not be our best partner of record, but because the relationship I had with that account team, you know, inside that VAR, they were willing to go to bat for me and, you know, our joint customer, right? Really at the end of the day. But, you know, that deal happened because of the relationship internally. And obviously, you know, success breeds success inside of a VAR. The one thing that will happen with your business faster than anything is if you are, maybe you're taking a flyer on a new product, right? It's not necessarily your primary thing on your line card at the VAR, but you have success and you get unbelievable margin out of it. The rest of your reps in the VAR are always going to say, well, how did you do that? Why are you doing that, right? So success breeds success. So you also have to celebrate your successes and you know, don't forget to thank them for that business. And so, yeah.
Recognition
is key. Yeah.
Let me ask you this, because this, you know, as you know, we always bring controversial topics within our show. So, and I do it simply because it is a controversial thing that I've heard throughout the years, right? You have your manufacturer A and SE, they're in a QBR or a quarterly business review. They're looking about their deals and all of a sudden they didn't make the quota and they immediately blame the partner. The partner didn't do this for me. The partner didn't do that for me. Or they, at the back end of the deal, they stabbed me because they reg another competitor and they went with that and I don't trust them anymore. You know, I bring that to the focus on to your perspective, right? Because the way I see it is, ultimately the partner has to make money. They have to make money to take care of their operations and business and whatnot. And because if you've done a good job at solidifying your brand as a manufacturer with the partner, the end game is you win together, you die together.
That's right.
If you are struggling as a listener with a partner, if you don't have that expectation with them to say we win and die together, it's going to create these situations where often, you know, it's perceived as the partner doesn't add any value, which is not true. They add value. What's your take on that, man?
I'm 100% in agreement with you. I mean, it may be edgy, but yeah, and the world's small. I mean, it's the minute you blame a partner, whether you blame them in a private QBR, that message always gets back somehow.
Absolutely.
I don't care, you know, if you think that no one else heard it outside of the four walls of that building. And, you know, once you burn that relationship, sometimes those are irreparable, right? I mean, I've been in businesses where, you know, a certain rep, it worked for us, burnt a VAR, and it killed the rest of our business with that VAR. It's like, you know, it's that kind of thing. You got to treat people, you know, with full respect. But yeah, I mean, you know, grow up. If you didn't make your number, you can't hang it on the partner. Even if the partner maybe had 70% of blame, right? At the end of the day, you own your number. You're the quarterback. And if you didn't make it, you know, step up and get it. Use it as a learning exercise. In the next quarterly business review with your partner, say, hey, look, you know, let's go through our wins, go through our losses. And how can we make sure this loss doesn't happen again, right? Use it as a coachable moment, not a blame moment.
I'll give you a good story on something that I did with a partner years ago. So on this, I will mention the partner, but this specific partner, when I was working at a large manufacturer, we would send quotes for data protection, right? And we would, because of the quoting system, we would add our own professional services to the quote, right? So as the quote came in from the sales rep to the partner, professional services showed up there. And look, at that time, I didn't know that they were not stripping the professional services so that the partner could do the professional services because they were certified. So quotes, transfer price comes in from the manufacturer to the partner. Then they put their own margin, give it to the customer, deal closes. We're doing the implementation. So when we were doing a quarterly business review, I was showing to the vice president of professional services that over $1 million in a quarter was given to my manufacturer, me, for just doing installations. And he flipped out saying, how can that be? How is that happening? Well, it's happening because it's not being stripped out of the quote. We're giving you the option, but if you strip this out of the quote, whoever is building the quote for you, if whether it's your internal team or us, you just need to make sure that you're now adding out of your own professional services bucket, because let's face it, they have to show how much money is coming per month on professional services and on product. You associate that. And after that, he was eternally grateful where that situation changed. And then from there, they saw that I had a genuine interest in them, which then created that relationship to say, all right, this is fantastic. It's great. Let's continue. Let's ride and die with Enrique when it comes to this product.
Yeah, that's a great story, man. And that's, it's 100% true. I mean, and a lot of the VAR side business is all based on professional services, because at the end of the day, some of the stuff is commodity, right? I mean, widget A is replaceable with widget B, but it's that value add of how it's deployed and, the value add that the partner brings, being that trusted advisor and really understanding the environment better than anybody else, because they're working so closely with that customer and have that all in view, not just that one product that's being represented. And a lot of things aren't just one product. You're building a data center, you're going to buy data protection, you're going to buy servers, you're going to buy storage, you're going to buy networking, so the person who understands all that and putting it in, wrapping it all together in a turnkey deliverable, it's key. So, I think, that's a great segue to the fact that, back to the SC side of the equation, we have to always remember that the SC in this equation is representing, the full interest of the partner, right? Not necessarily just the VAR side of it. But that said, there is this this mentality that, they will represent who's going to give them the best spiff.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
And I think that's one of the things that I see a lot of heartburn sometimes with the VAR side versus the vendor side SC. The VAR side SC will only take things that are going to give them some kind of special, special treatment or special return. And the vendor SC is like, I don't get that, right? So, there's a little bit of animosity there. And, my take on spiffs has changed over the years, right? I mean, I used to believe in them because I would see, kind of the reaction, but they don't form the right habits. They form the wrong behaviors, right? And I would rather give a partner more margin and give them, the ability to build a bigger business, sustainable business over these one-time quick hits than the spiff side of the world. But I'd love to get your take on it, because that's one of those other controversial things, right? I mean, spiff's almost a four or five letter word in our industry, depending on which side of the table you're on. And it's something that I've struggled with, even as I, launched companies and had to go build channel programs, do I do them, right? And of course we still ended up doing them, but I hate to say I've kind of soured on the whole concept of spiffs and that side of the world. But
I'm with you. I don't believe in them anymore. I think that what I've seen in the past with spiffs personally is that as you generate a spiff program, you're going to have different, either a boutique VAR or a medium side VAR or a large VAR that are going to use with that spiff different things, or they're going to create different things. I've known partners that will use it for a pool for marketing campaigns within that partner. I've known partners that says, hey, even though you says that you're getting a spiff, my rules within the partner says that we're not getting spiffs, right? So ultimately what controls behavior is, yes, coin operation is important, right? That controls behavior. But what controls behavior is how do you enable that person outside the product that you're selling on strategies to sell more of whatever ecosystem product that partner sells. For example, when I spent a lot of time in Latin America, yeah, I spent time on training partners on products that I sell and did different things, but I also spent time on sales processes and training on what questions to ask and training. And I kept them very neutral in such a way that, hey, you can ask, obviously I want you to ask these questions about my product, but you can do this with any other product to increase your bottom line. Selfishly, I mean, not being selfish is what I'm trying to say. And generally giving it pay forward, saying, if you ask it this way, this is how you can do it. Or if you do your sizing correctly on this side, this is where you can be conservative and this is where you can be aggressive, right? It's truly sitting down. And when you, the times that I persuaded or enticed a partner on spiffs, it basically came out like, okay, meh. It's nice to have, right? I think that the what I've seen is that partners that get spiffs that don't expect it, that come into their check straight up, those are the ones that's like, oh my gosh, this is great. That's the emotion you want. But it's so heavily regulated nowadays that it's like, it's almost like marketing funds, you know, for being signed and selling in large volume for a specific partner. You know that you're going to ride that horse because you need those funds to actually promote the marketing side. But, you know, does that mean that you're going to overachieve? Yeah, maybe, maybe not on the marketing for that partner. So that's why constant relationship, letting know the partner, hey, I'm here to make money with you. You're an important part of my business. But if you don't want in on this, please let me know. I don't want to waste your time and I don't want my time to be wasted.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it. Well, man, I love the episode. I think, you know, it's a dynamic that it's been there since the beginning of time. You know, hopefully give you a little bit of insight into, you know, just kind of why we have to work together and you know, that we're not adversarial. We're on the both same goal. We just do look at it a little bit different. And we obviously have a little bit different things in our organization that make our view of the lens that we look through look a little bit different. But love to hear your feedback on it. You know, we appreciate all the critical feedback we get from the episodes, but whether you're letting us know on LinkedIn, on our Twitter, through our website, we really appreciate it. And we're dropping these episodes again weekly. We're back, and it happens every Wednesday. You can always follow us, subscribe, and listen at everywhere at Sales Burrito, available on your major podcast platforms and always available at salesburrito.com. And so, my friend, it's been great. You know, we gotta get you a tan to go along with mine. And
absolutely.
until then, we'll keep the chips and salsa going and the knowledge flowing, and we're out.
Have a great day, everyone.
We hope you enjoy the Sales Burrito Show. To subscribe to catch future episodes wherever you catch your favorite podcast. Follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook at Sales Burrito. Until next time, keep the chips and salsa going and the knowledge flowing.